Penguin Random House Audio presents Star Wars, Ahsoka by E.K. Johnston. Read for you by Ashley Eckstein. Mandalore burned. Not all of it, of course, but enough that the smoke filled the air around her. Ahsoka Tano breathed it in. She knew what she had to do, but she wasn't sure it would work. Worse, she wasn't sure how long it would work, even if it did. But she was out of options, and this was the only chance she had left. She was there with an army and a mission, as she might have done when she was still Anakin Skywalker's Padawan. It probably would have gone better if Anakin were with her. "Be careful, Ahsoka," he told her before handing over her lightsabers and running off to save the Chancellor. "Maul is tricky, and he has no mercy in him at all." "I remember," she'd replied, trying to scrape up some of the brashness that had earned her the nickname Snips the first time they'd met. She didn't think the effort was tremendously successful, but he smiled anyway. "I know," he rolled his shoulders, already thinking of his own fight. "But you know how I worry." What could happen? Acting more like her old self was easier the second time. And then she found that she was smiling too. Now, the weight of her lightsabers in her hands was reassuring, but she would have traded them both for Anakin's presence in a heartbeat. She could see Maul, not far from her now. Smoke wreathed his black and red face, though it didn't seem to bother him. He'd already put aside his cloak, battle readiness oozing from his stance. He was in one of the plazas that wasn't burning yet, pacing while he waited for her. If she hadn't known that his legs were artificial, she never would have guessed they weren't the limbs he'd been born with. The prosthetics didn't slow him down at all. She walked toward him, determined. After all, she knew something she was pretty sure he didn't. "Where's your army, Lady Tano?" he called as soon as she was within earshot. "Busy defeating yours," she replied, hoping it was true. She wasn't going to give him the pleasure of seeing how much his calling her Lady Tano hurt. She wasn't a commander anymore, even though the battalion still treated her with the same courtesy they always had, because of her reputation. "It was so nice of your former masters to send you out alone and spare me the exertion of a proper fight. You're not even a real Jedi." Malice dripped from his every word, and he bared his teeth at her. His was the kind of anger that Master Yoda warned the younglings about. The sort that ate a person whole and twisted every part of them until they were unrecognizable. Ahsoka shuddered to think what Maul must have suffered to become this way. Still, she was smart enough to use it to her benefit. She needed him angry enough to think he had the upper hand. "It'll be a fair fight then," she retorted, looking him up and down. "You're only half a Sith." That was rude for no reason. The type of thing that would have had Master Kenobi rolling his eyes. But Ahsoka couldn't bring herself to regret it. Taunting one's enemy was customary, and Ahsoka was going to use all the cards she was dealt, even if it wasn't polite. He was right, after all. She was no Jedi. Maul was stalking sideways, with a dark feline grace that was oddly hypnotic, and twirling the hilt of the lightsaber in his hand. Ahsoka tightened her grip on her own lightsabers, and then forced herself to relax. She needed him to come closer. It was a bit like meditation, this waiting. She knew it had worked against Maul before, on Naboo, when Obi-Wan beat him the first time. She reached out to the Force, and found it waiting for her, a comfort and a source of power. She opened her mind to it, and listened with every part of her that could. Then she moved, mirroring Maul across the plaza, and taking one step back for every step he took toward her. "No Jedi, but still a coward," he said. "Or did Skywalker forget to teach you how to stand your ground before he threw you aside?" "I left under my own power," she told him. In the moment, the words felt like the truth, despite the pain that lay underneath them. She ignored the hurt and refocused on her sense of balance, on Maul. "Of course, And I volunteered for that garbage pile and those first monstrous legs, Maul said mockingly. She felt his rage swell within him, almost to the breaking point, but not quite yet. He activated the lightsaber and quickened his steps. It was easy for her to pretend he'd caught her off guard, to stumble backward, away from his vengeful charge. I'll bet you volunteered for this too, Lady Tano, he crowed. That much was correct, but he could perceive only her weakness. His anger blinded him to all else. One last attempt at glory to impress a master who has no further use for you. That's not true, she shouted. Just a little farther now. He was almost ensnared. He bore down on her, cruel laughter scraping out of his throat, and still she waited. Then, just before she was in his reach, she sprang the trap. The familiar green energy sang as she activated her lightsabers and moved to engage one last feint. Maul lunged forward, and Ahsoka took a quick step back, drawing him past the point of no return. He swung down, directly at her head, and she responded with all her strength. Her weapons locked with his, holding him exactly where she wanted him to be. Now! She commanded her unseen allies. The response was fast, too fast for Maul's distracted defense. Ahsoka threw herself clear just in time. The ratio came to life, trapping her prey with his lightsaber, still raised against her. Chapter 1. She was alone. Something she was never meant to be. Her people were tribal, blood and bond, and her ability to use the Force gave her a galaxy of brethren from all species. Even after she left the Jedi Temple, she could feel the others when she wanted to. The ebb and flow of them in the Force around her. Until, of course, she couldn't. Now she almost preferred the solitude. If she was alone, she didn't have to make choices that affected anyone other than herself. Fix a malfunctioning motivator, or not. Eat, or not. Sleep, or not. Dream, or not. She tried to dream as little as possible, but that day in particular wasn't good for it. Empire Day. Across the galaxy from the core to the outer rim, though somewhat less enthusiastically in the latter, there would be festivities commemorating the establishment of order and government by Emperor Palpatine. It was the first such celebration. The new empire was only a year old, but the idea of celebrating the day at all nauseated her. She remembered it for entirely different reasons than peace. Mandalore had burned, and even though she, Rex, and the others had managed to save most of it, their victory had been immediately undone with such violence that Ahsoka could hardly bear to think about it. So she did it.
Ashla!
The voice was loud and cheerful, wrenching her from her memories.
Ashla, you'll miss the parade!
Living in the Outer Rim had its benefits. The planetary populations were small and not highly organized, making it easier to live under an assumed name. She could also easily stay away from any of the major hyperspace lanes. Most of the planets in the Outer Rim didn't have anything interesting enough to attract Imperial attention anyway, and the last thing Ahsoka wanted to do was attract attention. What she hadn't accounted for was the attention of her neighbors, the Fardis, a local family who seemed to have their fingers in every bit of business that happened on Thebeska. They took her under their wing, as much as they could with Ahsoka maintaining her distance. She was still grieving, in her own way, and it helped if she told herself that she didn't want new ties, new friends. Thebeska suited her. It was dusty and quiet, yet there were enough newcomers that she didn't stick out. The planet did brisk trade in water and tech, but nothing on a large scale. Even the smuggling operations, luxury goods and off-world food for the most part, catered to a relatively small number of people. No self-respecting pirate of Ahsoka's acquaintance would stoop so low. It was as good as any new place for Ashla to call home.
Ashla, are you in there?
The girl outside shouted again. Too cheerful, Ahsoka thought with a shake of her head. Empire Day wasn't that exciting, even if you believed in the propaganda. The girls were up to something, and they wanted her to know it. Ahsoka considered her options. She was known for wandering into the flats alone. There wasn't anything dangerous there, and certainly nothing that would be dangerous to her. So she could sit quietly, pretending she wasn't home, and if anyone asked later, she'd just say she'd gone for a walk. She stood and crossed the floor of her tiny house. It wasn't fancy enough to have rooms, or even room dividers, but one of the things growing up in the Jedi Temple prepared a person for was austerity. If Ahsoka didn't own things, she had less to carry with her when it was time to go. She tried very hard not to think about the empty weapon belt she had kept, though she didn't wear it. She had heard the warning and the girl's show of cheerfulness as they called to her, but she needed more details. The only way to get them was to open the door. "I'm coming! I'm coming!" she said, hoping she sounded enthusiastic. Ahsoka had met the Fardi clan at the shipyards when she arrived on the planet. They ran most of the shipping from there, legal and otherwise. Ahsoka would have avoided them entirely, except the younger ones followed her about like ducklings, and she hadn't worked up the bile to discourage them yet. She opened the door and found four of them staring up at her, with a couple of the older girls behind them. The older ones didn't look as carefree as the little ones did. Ahsoka tensed, and then forced herself to relax. She reached out with her senses, very carefully. But if there was something to feel, it was still too far away.
"Ashla, you have to come right now," said the eldest.
There were so many Fardi children that Ahsoka struggled to remember which name belonged to whom. She looked down at them and had a nagging feeling that she was forgetting something.
"Yeah," said one of the gaggle of children. "Dad's got fancy guests asking to meet any new people. And you're new, so you should come. You can sit with us for the parade and flyby."
A year's residency still qualified Ahsoka as new, even though it was the longest she had stayed on a single planet since she'd become Anakin Skywalker's Padawan.
"There are a lot of ships in the yard right now," the eldest one said carefully, as though someone might be listening to her every word. "For the flyby, from all over the place. Security's a disaster, as they try to log everything."
Out here, fancy guests meant clean clothes. Even the well-off Fardis were always coated with the dust that blew off of the flats. Ahsoka imagined the crisp lines and dull colors of Imperial uniforms. They would make an impression on Thebeska. Ahsoka knew what the Fardis would do. They had their legitimate businesses to consider, not to mention all the family members. They would tell the Imperials anything they wanted to know, and Ahsoka couldn't hold it against them. She had apparently made a good enough impression to warrant the visit, and the hint about the shipyard. It was as much as Ahsoka could expect.
"Why don't you guys go on ahead?" she said, and nodded solemnly to the older girls.
She didn't know if their parents knew they were here, but she wanted to let them know she appreciated the risk they were taking.
"You can save me a seat while I clean up. I slept in a bit this morning, and I can't go to the Empire Day Parade like this."
She gestured down at her clothes. They were the only ones she owned, and everyone knew it, but it was enough of an excuse to get the job done. The little ones chorused entreaties that she hurry up, but promised to save a place for her. The older two stayed quiet and herded their siblings back toward the center of town. Ahsoka didn't watch them go. As soon as they turned around, she shut the door and took a moment to gather herself. She didn't have a lot to pack. Her single room was bare, except for the bed and thick floor mat where she might have entertained guests, had she ever had any. She rolled the mat aside and uncovered the compartment where she kept a little currency and her blaster. She threw everything in a bag and put on a short cowl that would cover her face. She was going to have to get a new one soon. Her head had grown again, and her montrals were almost too tall for the hood. As she shut the door of her house for the final time, the air was split by an all-too-familiar whine. The flyby had started, and it seemed that the Empire was showing off the maneuverability of its latest fighters. The streets were deserted. Ahsoka could hear the music, raucous and martial at the same time, as the parade passed along the main avenue several blocks over. She couldn't figure out why there were so many Imperials all of a sudden. Surely Empire Day wasn't the only reason. But the planet didn't have much besides dust and the Fardis, and a survivor of Order 66. Two armored Imperials rounded the corner. Ahsoka held her breath and reached out. There was nothing familiar about them. They weren't clones. They were the newer recruits, the stormtroopers. Nothing much to worry about then.
"What are you doing here?"
They raised their guns.
Why aren't you at the festivities?
I'm on my way, Ahsoka said, careful to keep her face pointed at the ground. I was out on the flats this morning hunting and lost track of time.
Move along,
said the stormtrooper, though he didn't lower his gun. The other one said something into his comm that Ahsoka couldn't hear. Happy Empire Day, she said, and turned down an alley in the direction of the music. She didn't wait to see if they would follow her. She jumped to a first-story window and climbed up the building until she reached the roof. So close to the main Fardy compound, the houses were nicer than her little shack. They were taller and had flat roofs. More important, they were built very close together to save on construction costs. It wasn't a perfect traveling path, but for someone with Ahsoka's abilities, it was passable enough. Hoping that no one could see her, she ran along the tops of the houses. Even with the danger, it felt better than anything Ahsoka had done in a long time. She didn't use the Force to run. There was no point in taking unnecessary risks. But she did use it to make sure each jump across the street below was safe. Every time she looked down, she saw more stormtroopers patrolling. They didn't appear to be searching for a specific target, though. The pair she talked to must not have raised any alarm. Ahsoka reached the edge of the row of tall houses and crouched, looking down over the shipyard. There were two under the Fardy's control, and this was the smaller one. The bigger one would have had a larger selection and possibly more holes in its security system, but the smaller one had a roof approach, so Ahsoka decided to take her chances here. The ships were mostly Imperial, and therefore not good targets. They would have been registered and tagged, and probably had some kind of tracking device. Ahsoka looked at the troop carrier with some regret. Of all the ships docked there, it was the one with which she was most familiar, but she couldn't take the risk. Instead, she focused on a small freighter tucked in at the very back of the yard. It was a Fardy ship, one of the legal ones, but Ahsoka knew it could be made less legal very quickly. The Fardys paid her to tinker. She was a good mechanic, and she'd earned their trust through diligent work. The ship was also unguarded. Ahsoka didn't know if it was an invitation or not, but she wasn't about to let the opportunity pass her by. There were maybe 20 stormtroopers in the yard. Before, when she could openly use the Force, that would have been no trouble at all. Now, with just her blaster, Ahsoka took a moment to consider her options. Anakin would have crashed right through, regardless of personal risk. Even without his lightsaber, he'd have been fast enough and strong enough to make it. It would have been very noticeable, though. Explosions had tended to follow close behind her old master. She missed the excitement, but this was not the time for it. Master Obi-Wan would have tried to charm himself through, and would invariably have ended up making as much noise as Anakin anyway. When are you going to admit you're on your own? Ahsoka muttered. They're gone. They're dead. And now it's just you. As motivational speeches went, it was not her best. But it did spur her into action. She risked a jump from the rooftop to the alley below, prioritizing speed over anything else. She pulled the blaster out of her bag. Quickly, she unseated the overload dowels in the ammo pack and set the blaster on the ground. Now, she had to move. She ran down the alley and leapt over a short wall into a family garden. A few steps and another jump took her to a different alley, and she raced toward the shipyard. She reached the open area just as the blaster exploded. The stormtroopers reacted immediately, falling into neat lines and running toward the noise with admirable dedication. They didn't completely desert the yard, but it was good enough for Ahsoka's purposes. Ahsoka stuck to corners where she could hide behind crates to block the remaining Imperial sightlines. She reached the ramp of the Fardy ship and was aboard before anyone was the wiser. I hope I'm not stealing anything you need, she said to her absent benefactors, but thanks for the ship. The engine hummed to life, just as the other stormtroopers returned to the yard, but by then, it was too late. Ahsoka was in the air before they could set up the heavy weaponry, and out of range before they could fire. She was away, on the run again, and she had no idea where in the galaxy she was going to go next. Chapter 2. From orbit, Ra'eda didn't look like much. The readout from the Navi computer wasn't particularly enthralling either, but that was part of Ahsoka's reason for choosing the moon. It was small, and out of the way even by Outer Rim standards, with only one resource. Ahsoka could be unremarkable here. She
She didn't like to make the same mistake twice, and she had made a big one on Thebeska, getting involved with one of the planet's most prominent families. Ahsoka set the ship down on what could barely be called a spaceport and secured it against theft as best she could. While in transit, Ahsoka had made some modifications to the vessel, hoping to conceal where she'd gotten it from, and discovered that a fairly sophisticated ground lock system was already in place. Recoding it had been relatively straightforward, even without an astromech droid like R2-D2 to help. She did one final check, her eyes drawn to a pair of metal rings that demarcated a pressure valve on the power console. The rings had no purpose beyond making the panel look clean and tidy. Ahsoka pried them loose and pocketed them without much more thought. That done, she shouldered her bag and walked down the ramp. On the ground, Raeda had a distinctive, though not altogether unpleasant odor. There was life on the moon's surface that the computer didn't account for. Green and growing. Ahsoka could sense it without effort and drew in a deep breath. After a year of either space or Thebeska's dust, it was a welcome change. Perhaps, when Ahsoka meditated here, she would find something between her and the yawning gulf that had haunted her since Order 66. A few people were in the spaceport, loading crates onto a large freighter, but they ignored Ahsoka as she made her way past them. If there was someone she was supposed to pay for a berth, Ahsoka didn't find them, so she decided to worry about that later. A place like Raeda had even less of a legitimate government than Thebeska, or a Hutt-controlled world. But Ahsoka could handle any local toughs who thought she might be easy pickings. What she needed now was a place to stay, and she knew where she wanted to start looking. Raeda had only one major settlement, and Ahsoka would not go so far as to call it a city. By Coruscant standards, the settlement barely existed at all, and even the Fardis would have turned their nose up at it. There were no tall houses, no rooftop highways, and only one market near the dilapidated administration buildings in the center of town. Ahsoka headed straight for the outskirts, where she hoped there would be an abandoned house she could borrow. If not, she'd have to start looking outside of town. As she walked, Ahsoka took note of her new surroundings. Though the architecture was monotonous and mostly prefabricated, there was enough decorative embellishment that she knew the people who lived in the houses cared about them. They weren't transient workers. They were on Raeda to stay. Moreover, judging by the variation in style, Ahsoka could tell that the people who lived on Raeda had come from all over the Outer Rim. That made the moon an even better place for her to hide, because her Togruta features would be unremarkable. After a few blocks, Ahsoka found herself in a neighborhood with smaller houses that had been cobbled together with no sense of aesthetic. This suited her, and she set to looking for one that was uninhabited. The first one she found had no roof. The second was right next to a cantina. Quiet enough in the middle of the day, but presumably loud and obnoxious at night. The third, a couple of streets over from the cantina and right on the edge of the town, looked promising. Ahsoka stood in front of it, weighing her options. "There's no one in it," said someone behind her. Ahsoka's hands tightened on lightsaber hilts that were no longer there as she turned. It was a girl about Ahsoka's age, but with more lines around her eyes. Ahsoka had spent her life on starships or in the Jedi Temple for the most part. This girl looked like she had worked outside all the time and had weathered skin to show for it. Her eyes were sharp, but not vicious. She was lighter than Master Windu, but darker than Rex, and she had more hair than both of them combined. Not that that was difficult. Braided into brown lines neatly out of her way and secured behind her head. "Why is it abandoned?" Ahsoka asked.
"Sietra got married, moved out," was the reply. "There's nothing wrong with it if you're looking for a place."
"Do I have to buy it?" Ahsoka asked. She had some credits, but preferred to save them as long as she possibly could.
"Sietra didn't," said the girl. "I don't see why you should."
"Well, then I suppose it suits me," Ahsoka said. She paused, not entirely sure what came next. She didn't want to volunteer a lot of personal information, but she had a decent story prepared if anyone asked.
"I'm Kaden," said the girl. "Kaden Lardy. Are you here for the harvest? That's why most people come here, but we're almost done. I'd be out there myself, except I lost an argument with one of the threshers yesterday."
"No," said Ahsoka. "I'm not much of a farmer. I'm just looking for a quiet place to set up shop."
Caden shot her a piercing look, and Ahsoka realized she was going to have to be more clear, or she'd stick out in spite of herself. She sighed. "I repair droids and other mechanicals," she said. She wasn't as good as Anakin had been, but she was good enough. Away from the temple and the war, Ahsoka had discovered that the galaxy was full of people who were merely good at things, not prodigious. It was taking her a while to readjust her way of thinking.
"We can always use that," Caden said. "Is that all your stuff?"
"Yes," Ahsoka said shortly, hoping to discourage further questions. It worked, because Caden took half a step back and looked embarrassed.
"I'll let a few people know you're setting up when they get in from the fields tonight," she said before the pause grew uncomfortably long. "They'll be along tomorrow with work for you. In a few days, it'll be like you've never lived anywhere else."
"I doubt that," Ahsoka said, too low for Caden to hear. She cleared her throat and spoke louder.
"That'll be fine. Welcome to Raeda."
Caden's tone was sardonic, a forced smile on her face. But Ahsoka smiled back anyway.
"Thanks," she said.
Caden walked back up the street, favoring her left leg as she went. The limp was not pronounced, but Ahsoka could tell that the injury was painful. That meant medical treatment on Raeda was either expensive or unavailable. She shook her head and ducked through the door of her new house. Sietra, whoever she was clearly no housekeeper. Ahsoka had expected some mustiness given the abandoned state of the house, but what she found was actual dirt. The floors and the single table were coated with it, and she was a little worried what she might find on the bed. Ahsoka ran a finger across the tabletop and discovered that the dirt was mixed with some kind of engine grease, which made it sticky. "The things Jedi training doesn't prepare you for," she mused, and then bit her tongue. Even alone, she shouldn't say that word. It felt like betrayal to deny where she'd come from, but it wasn't safe, and she couldn't afford to slip up in public. Ahsoka found a cupboard that had cleaning supplies in it and set to work. It was an easy job, if tedious, and strangely satisfying to see the dirt disappear. The cleaner wasn't a droid, but it was efficient. As it hummed around the room, Ahsoka was able to find the best place in the house to hide her things. The panel under the crude shower came off and revealed a compartment just large enough for her stash of credits. Everything else went under the bed once Ahsoka finished disinfecting it. Then she sat cross-legged on the mattress and listened to the cleaner circumnavigate the room. Its hum reminded her of the training sphere she used as a youngling. She closed her eyes and felt her body ready itself for the energy bolt, though she was pretty sure the cleaner wasn't going to shoot her. From there, it was easy to fall into her meditation. For a moment, she hesitated, afraid of what she'd seen, not seen, since the Jedi Purge. But then she let herself go. Meditation was one of the things she missed most, and one of the few things that wasn't likely to get her caught, even if someone saw her doing it. The Force felt different now, and Ahsoka wasn't sure how much of the difference was her. By walking away from the temple, from the Jedi, she had given up her right to the Force. Or at least that's what she told herself sometimes. She knew it was a lie. The Force was always going to be a part of her, whether she was trained or not. The way it was part of everything. She couldn't remove the parts of her that were sensitive to it any more than she could breathe on the wrong side of an airlock. Her authority was gone, but her power remained. But there was a darkness to her meditations now that she didn't like. It was as if a shroud had been wrapped around her perceptions, dulling her vision. She knew there was something there, but it was hard to make out, and she wasn't entirely sure she wanted to. The familiar presence of Anakin was gone, like a disrupted conduit that no longer channeled power the way it was meant to. Ahsoka couldn't feel him anymore. Or any of the others. Even the sense of the Jedi as a whole was gone, and she'd been able to feel that since she was too small to articulate what it was that she felt. The feeling had saved her life once, when she was very young, and a false Jedi came to Sheely to enslave her. She missed it, like she would have missed a limb. The cleaner ran into the bed platform, twice, stubbornly refusing to alter its course. Ahsoka leaned down and turned it in the other direction. She watched it for a few moments before she retreated back into her meditation. This time, not quite so far. She wanted to get a sense of Raeda, something more than her initial response could tell her, and this was as good a time as any to do it.
The moon stretched out around her. She was facing the center of town, so she reached behind where she sat. There were the fields, mostly harvested, as Caden had said, and ready for the next season's planting. There was stone. Rocky hills and caves where nothing useful could grow. There were large animals, though whether they were for labor or food, Ahsoka couldn't tell. And there were boots, dozens of them, walking toward her. Ahsoka shook herself out of her trance and found that the cleaner was cheerfully butting itself against the door to the shower. She got up to turn it off, and the new sound reached her ears. Talking, laughing, and stamping feet. Her new neighbors were home, from their day's work in the fields.
Chapter 3.
Caden showed up on Ahsoka's doorstep bright and early the following morning with two ration packs and a... "What is that?" Ahsoka asked, staring at the mangled bits of scrap Caden held under her arm.
"Your first patient, if you're interested," Caden replied cheerfully.
"I can't fix it if I don't know what it was supposed to do in the first place," Ahsoka protested, but held out her hands anyway. Caden took this as an invitation to enter. She deposited the broken pieces into Ahsoka's hands and then sat on the bed, putting the rations down beside her.
"It's the Thresher I lost a fight with," Caden said.
If she felt strange about sitting on the place where Ahsoka slept, she gave no sign. Then again, the bed was Ahsoka's only furniture, besides the low table. Ahsoka spread the pieces on the table and sat down on the floor to look at them more closely. She supposed that the contraption might have been a Thresher, but it could also have been a protocol droid for all the mess it was in.
"I'd hate to see what happens when you win fights," Ahsoka said.
"It was not my fault."
Caden said it with the air of a person who has made the argument, unsuccessfully, several times before.
"One moment we were cruising along, set to make quota and everything, and the next thing I knew, disaster."
"How's the leg?" Ahsoka asked. Her fingers moved across the table, rearranging parts and trying to figure out if anything was salvageable.
"It'll be well enough to go back to work tomorrow," Caden said. "I'll keep my harvest bonus, particularly if I don't have to pay to replace the Thresher."
Ahsoka gave her a long look.
"I'll pay you instead, I mean," Caden said quickly. "Starting with breakfast. Dig in."
She tossed Ahsoka a ration pack. Ahsoka didn't recognize the label, except that it wasn't Imperial or Republic.
"No place like home," Caden said, ripping her own pack open. "There's not much point in living on a farm planet if you have to import food. These just make it easier to keep track of who gets what."
"I guess that makes sense," Ahsoka said. She tore the packaging open and took a sniff. She had definitely eaten worse.
"Anyway, can you fix my Thresher?" Caden asked.
"Why don't you tell me what went wrong with it, and I'll see what I can do," Ahsoka said. She turned back to the table and continued to move the parts around while Caden told her about the mishap. Ahsoka was used to the way clones told war stories, but Caden could have given them a run for their credits. To hear her tell it, the Thresher had suddenly developed sentience and objected to its lot as a farming implement, and only Caden's quick thinking and heavy boots had prevented it from taking over the galaxy.
"And when it finally stopped moving," Caden said, winding up, "my sister pointed out that I was bleeding. I said it was only fair since the Thresher was bleeding oil, but then I passed out a little bit, so I guess it was worse than I thought. I woke up in medical with this fancy bandage and this stupid machine in a tray beside my cot."
Ahsoka laughed, surprising herself, and held up a bent piece of what had once been the Thresher's coolant system. "Here's the problem," she said. "Well, I mean part of your problem. If you can replace this, I can rebuild the Thresher."
"Replace it?" Caden's smile died. "Do you think you can just, I don't know, unbend it somehow?"
Ahsoka looked down. This wasn't like the temple or even her field experience commanding troops. There were no supply lines and no backup, not without cost. Replacement was a last resort.
"I can give it a shot," she said. "Now, Tell me more about how things work around here. The previous night, Kaden had not been overly curious about Ahsoka's reasons for coming to Raeda. As the girl chattered on about work rotations and crop cycles, it occurred to Ahsoka that having reasons might not be important. As Kaden described it, Raeda was a good place to lead an unmomentous life. Hard work, ample food, and just enough official enforcement that local freelancing was discouraged. No one asked too many questions, and as long as you met your work quotas, your presence was unremarkable. Ahsoka Tano wouldn't do very well here, but Ashla would do just fine. Ahsoka looked for something heavy she could use to hit the metal. If she was going to fix things professionally, she was going to have to invest in some tools. She mentally counted her credits and tried to figure out how many of them she could spare against an unknown future. She would have to make an investment at some point, and tools would help sell her cover story. She ended up using the heel of her boot and hitting the piece against the floor to avoid breaking the table. It wasn't top quality when she was finished, but the part would no longer let coolant leak out. She set to reassembling the thresher around it. "I've left my ship at the spaceport," Ahsoka said. "Do I have to register it with anyone?" "No," Kaden said. "Just make sure you lock it up tight. There are more than a few opportunists around here." She meant thieves. Ahsoka understood. Nowhere was perfect. "That's why I left most of my gear on board," she lied. "It's more secure than this house is."
"We can help you with that," Kaden said. "My sister and I mean, she's good at making locks, and I'm good at convincing people to leave you alone."
"When you're not losing fights with machinery, I assume," Ahsoka said.
"Most people lose arms and legs when things go badly," Kaden said in her own defense. "I'm too good for that."
Kaden rolled off the bed and walked over to take a look at what Ahsoka was doing. She hummed approvingly and then pointed to the random pieces still on the table.
"What are those for?" she asked.
"I have no idea," Ahsoka replied. "But they didn't seem to have a place in the machine, so I left them aside. I think it should work once you refill the coolant and refuel the lines."
"I can do that when I reattach the blade," Kaden said.
She flipped a switch and the repulsors fired up, lifting the thresher off the table about a meter. She turned it off just as quickly.
"Excellent," she said. "I'll test the steering and the other parts when I'm outside, but the repulsors were the part I was worried about. It's not much good if it can't fly."
Ahsoka wasn't sure how much good it would be if it wouldn't steer, but she was also not the expert, so she let it pass.
"You're welcome," she said.
She pulled the rest of the food out of the ration pack and ate it quickly. Kaden watched her eat.
"I'll pay you in food, then?" the girl asked. "I mean, it's a good way to start, and later we can work out other arrangements."
"Can I trade rations for tools?" Ahsoka asked.
"No," Kaden said. "I mean, food rations aren't worth much to those of us who have been here a while."
Ahsoka considered her options. She hadn't had time to take a full inventory of the ship, and it was possible that the tools she needed were there, and she did need to eat. "Just this once," she said, hoping she sounded like someone who was experienced at driving a hard bargain. "Next time, we're going to negotiate before I do any repairs." Kaden picked up the thresher and smiled. She still seemed a little guarded, which suited Ahsoka just fine. She was, she reminded herself, not trying to make friends, particularly not friends who were at perfect ease sitting on her bed. That sort of thing bespoke a level of intimacy in most cultures. The Jedi Temple was not a place where such things were encouraged, and Ahsoka never felt motivated strongly enough to go around the rules the way that certain others had.
"I left the crate outside," Kaden said. "You can come and get it."
Ahsoka followed her out the door and saw the promised payment. Food enough for a month, probably, and maybe longer if she was careful with it. Kaden was right. Food was only worthwhile to trade if you were new. Clearly, shortage was not an issue. She dragged the crate inside as Kaden made her way down the street, her limp much less noticeable than it had been the day before. Alone again, Ahsoka lifted the crate onto the table and fought off the childish impulse to do the work with her mind instead of her arms. The Force wasn't meant to be used so lightly, and it wasn't as though throwing boxes around was real training. Her focus needed to be elsewhere. Using the Force was a natural extension of herself. Not using it all the time was strange. She would have to practice, really practice with proper meditation, or someday she would need her abilities and be unable to respond in time. She'd been lucky to escape Order 66, and her escape had not been without terrible cost. The other Jedi, the ones who had died, hadn't been able to save themselves, powerful or otherwise. She felt the familiar tightness in her throat, the same strangling grief that came every time she imagined what had happened when the clone troopers turned. How many of her friends had been shot down by men they served with for years? How many of the younglings had been murdered by a man wearing a face they implicitly trusted? And how did the clones feel after it was done? She knew the temple had burned. She had received the warning not to return. But she didn't know where any of her friends had been during the disaster. She knew only that she couldn't find them afterward, that her sense of them was gone, as if they had ceased to exist. Ahsoka felt herself spiraling down through her grief and reached out to grasp something, anything to remind her of the light. She found the green fields of Raeda, fields she hadn't even seen with her own eyes yet. For a few moments, she let herself get lost in the rhythm of growing things that needed only the sun and some water to live. That simplicity was heartening, even if at that particular moment she couldn't remember exactly what Master Yoda had said about plants in the Force. The extra pieces of Kaden's thresher were still on the table. Ahsoka leaned down and picked them up, absently weighing them in her hands before she put them in her pocket. There they jingled against the rings she'd taken off the ship console the day before. If she kept accumulating tech at this rate, she was going to need bigger pockets. Thinking about what she needed reminded Ahsoka that she really ought to check out her ship for tools and other useful items. She looked around the house quickly. The crate was on the table, but it was nondescript, and the panel over her credits in the shower was secure. It didn't look like anything that would appeal to a thief, but Ahsoka was uneasy as she shut the door behind her. "I hope Kaden needs something else fixed soon," she said under her breath to a non-existent R2-D2. "I'd feel better if I had a lock." One of the problems with spending a lot of time with an astromech droid was that one tended to continue talking to it even when it was no longer there to talk to. Ahsoka walked up the street, toward the center of town and the spaceport. She paid more attention to her surroundings this time, noticing the little shops perched on corners waiting for customers. Most of them sold the same goods and sundries, and Ahsoka needed none of them. The larger houses in the center of town no longer looked intimidating now that Ahsoka had a place of her own to retreat to. Two places if she counted the ship, which was still parked in the spaceport exactly as Ahsoka had left it. She opened the hatch and went inside. It would draw too much attention if she did a flyover of the hills near her house. If she wanted to scout out the caves, she was going to have to do it with her feet. The house and the ship were a good start, but it would be nice to have a place she could go in an emergency. "Food, tools, safe place in case I need to run," she said out loud. She really should stop that. She missed R2-D2. It wasn't much of a plan, but it was better than nothing. Chapter 4. Kaden didn't come back the next day, which Ahsoka took as a sign that the girl had healed enough to return to work. In the daylight, the Raeda settlement was mostly deserted. Nearly everyone who lived on the moon worked in the fields. Those who didn't, food vendors and the like, usually followed the field workers out of town in the morning. It made sense to go where the money was. This meant that Ahsoka had her days to herself. Or at least she would, until Kaden made good on her promise to tell the others that Ahsoka could fix things for them. When the quiet got too much for Ahsoka to bear, she tucked a ration pack into her bag, filled a canteen with water, and headed toward the hills. It was warm enough that she didn't need her cloak, though she knew that when the sun went down, the heat would drain off quickly. Ahsoka was used to fluctuating temperatures. When she'd been a Padawan, she'd only occasionally known what sort of planet she might end up on. And that was good training when it came to learning how to adapt. At least it didn't get cold enough on the moon that she'd need a parka. There didn't seem to be much in the way of wildlife on Raeda. Ahsoka had seen a few avians clustered around the water sources when she flew in. There must have been pollinators of some kind, but when it came to big things, predators or creatures worth hunting for meat, Raeda didn't offer much in the way of variation. The place would have driven Anakin to distraction, unless he somehow managed to arrange for pod races. No real technology to fiddle with, Nothing dangerous to protect hapless villagers from. Just work and home. Work and home. He never said as much, but Ahsoka knew her master had gotten enough of that growing up on Tatooine. Master Obi-Wan would have said Raeda was a good place to relax, and then somehow stumbled on a nest of pirates, or a ring of smugglers, or a conspiracy of Sith. Ahsoka, Ashla, was hoping for something in the middle. Home and work. And just enough excitement to keep her from climbing the walls. In the meantime, climbing the hills would do. Ahsoka had left the plains and was walking over rolling hills, each covered with rocks and whispering grasses that concealed all manner of dells, hollows, and caves. Though the settlement itself was indefensible, the surrounding area would be a more than adequate place to stage an insurgency if needed. There were good vantage points of the spaceport, and the caves would provide cover from an aerial assault. The only trouble was water, but if the farmers had tech like portable threshers, they must have portable water sources too. Ahsoka stopped on a hilltop and shook her head ruefully. She could not stop thinking like a tactician. The clones, before they would have tried to kill her, would have said that was a good thing. Anakin would have agreed with them. But Ahsoka still remembered, vaguely, Jedi training before the war. They hadn't focused so much on tactics then, and Ahsoka had still been interested in what she was learning. Surely now that she had nothing left to fight for, she could go back to that. "Not until you're safe," she whispered. "Not until you know for sure that you are safe." Even as she said the words, she knew it would never come to pass. She would never be safe again. She would have to stay ready to fight. She guessed the Empire wouldn't visit Raeda anytime soon, as there was nothing on the moon they needed. But she knew how Palpatine worked. Even when he was the Chancellor, he liked control. As the Emperor, as a Sith Lord, he'd be even more of an autocrat. With people like Governor Tarkin to help him, every part of the galaxy would feel the Imperial touch. But Raeda was clear of it for now, at least. Ahsoka left the hilltop and ventured into one of the caves. She was pleased to discover that it was dry enough that she could store food there if she needed to, and tall enough that she could stand up without the tops of her montrals brushing the ceiling. She wouldn't want to live here permanently, but in a pinch it wouldn't be so bad. Toward the back of the cave was a natural low shelf where a piece of rock had broken off and left a flat surface. Part of the shelf had cracked and fallen onto the cave floor. Ahsoka picked it up, noting that the edges of the cracked piece matched up with the solid shelf. She set the piece down where it had broken off, and it fit neatly into place, with only a thin seam revealing the break. Ahsoka picked up the shard of rock again and fished in her pocket for the metal pieces she kept there. She set them down under where the broken rock would go and put the slab back on top. It still fit. It wasn't much of a hiding place, but Ahsoka didn't have much of anything to hide yet. It was more of a promise, a possibility, like how she judged the tactical value of the settlement and surrounding hills. If she needed to, she could cut into the rock underneath to make a larger compartment. Ahsoka stood up, leaving the metal pieces under the stone. She could return for them if she needed. She suspected that this wouldn't be the only cave she set up, but it would be the one to which she gave the most attention. It was the closest to the settlement, the first one she could reach if she was running. Yes, that would do for a start. Caden's repaired thresher was doing a fabulous job. Once she refueled it and added more coolant, the machine worked better than it ever had. This did not go unnoticed.
"Hey, Lardy," Tabola said at lunch break. "Where'd you get that? It looks like your old beast, but it moves like a new one."
Tabola was one of the oldest farmers, unmarried and mean when he was drunk. Caden avoided him as much as possible, but the man had a sharp eye for changes, and a faster thresher would be more than enough to catch his attention.
"I had it fixed after it sliced me up," Caden said.
"Who did it?"
"You know, I didn't get a name," Caden realized. That was strange. She and the Togruta newcomer had talked for a while both times, and Caden had introduced herself. She'd even been inside her house.
"She just moved into Sietra's old place."
"Clearly she's good at what she does," said Miara, Caden's sister.
The younger girl sat down on the ground beside her and held out her hands for Caden's canteen. Get your own, Caden said.
I'll refill them both on our way back out, Miara promised.
Caden rolled her eyes and passed the container. At 14, 3 years younger than Caden, Miara shouldn't have been working a full shift allotment, even though she was as capable as Caden had been at that age. Necessity was a harsh, if effective, teacher, and Caden regretted that the same pressures that had driven her to the fields at a young age pushed Miara after her, though the younger girl never complained. As a result, Caden had a hard time denying her anything. Thankfully, Miara was wise enough not to press the advantage too far.
If she can fix your old clanker like that, maybe I'll ask her to look at mine.
Tobolo was cheap, and his thresher had been patched so many times, Caden wasn't sure there was an original part on it.
You're not going to be able to put one over on her, Caden warned him. She's smart.
Maybe I'm more charming than you are, Tobolo said with a leer.
He got up and left.
Not with breath like that, Miara said, giggling.
Caden couldn't help laughing, too.
We'll warn her. Where's she from?
She didn't say that either, Caden admitted. Mostly we talked about Raeda.
You can't blame her for being cautious if she's new to the moon and on her own, Miara pointed out. You're right about her being smart. She probably wants to know what it's like in town before she opens up.
Who's opening up?
Four bodies thumped to the ground around them, the rest of their threshing crew joining them for lunch.
Caden made a friend, Miara said teasingly.
Did she now?
Vartan, their crew lead, waggled his dark eyebrows at her. It would have had more impact if his eyebrows hadn't been the only hair on his head.
She's a mechanic of sorts, Caden said, ignoring his tone.
It took more than a mechanical aptitude to turn her head, though maybe she was going to have to reevaluate that. There was a lot to be said for cleverness.
I didn't get her name, but she fixed the thresher so well, it's better now than when I bought it.
I thought it seemed less murderous today,
Malat said, digging into her food with long, delicate fingers.
We'll go and get her after shift and take her to Seldes,
Miara declared, referring to the cantina where they went nearly every night. She got up and went to refill the canteens.
What if she doesn't want to come out?
Caden asked.
What else is she going to do?
Hoban asked. He had finished eating and was lying back on the ground with his hat over his face to shield his pale skin from the sun.
Sit at home by herself in the dark?
Maybe she likes that sort of thing,
suggested Neera, Hoban's long-suffering twin.
If Tobola's going to introduce himself to her, we should make sure she meets other people, Vartan said.
Or she'll be so put off by him, she'll jump on the first ship out of here.
It was on the tip of Caden's tongue to mention that her new friend had a ship of her own, but something stopped her. No name, no history. She probably wouldn't want Caden spilling her secrets. Caden could understand that. There were plenty of things she didn't like sharing with her sister, let alone her crew, and she'd known her crew for years.
All right, she said finally. After we're done for the day and cleaned up a bit, I'll go and ask her if she wants to come out with us. But you won't pressure her, and you won't buck her if she doesn't want to be bugged.
Yes, ma'am, said Vartan, saluting.
The others laughed, and Caden was gracious enough to join in. The horn sounded, so she threw her head back and tipped the last crumbs of her lunch out of the package and into her mouth. Miara handed her a full canteen of water with a smile, and then it was back to work.
Chapter 5 Seldes was a small cantina, but it still produced an astonishing level of noise. Ahsoka was very glad she hadn't taken the house next to it, or she might never have gotten a good night's sleep again. There was live music, of course, but the place was also crammed full of people, none of whom seemed to be able to speak below a dull roar.
Come on, Caden yelled. We'll sit in a corner and that'll make it easier to talk.
Ahsoka had her doubts about that. Frankly, she had her doubts about going out with Caden at all. The girl had shown up just as Ahsoka was agreeing to do a small repair for a truly odious man named Tobola, and she had invited Ahsoka out for some real food. Ahsoka had tried to protest, but her heart hadn't been in it, and it wasn't until she and Caden were through the door of the cantina that Ahsoka wished she had resisted a little harder.
Are you sure about this? She asked. Isn't there someplace quieter?
What?
Said Caden. Ahsoka repeated herself directly into Kaden's ear. How did anyone in this place hear anything? How could they order drinks?
No, Kaden replied. Selda has the best food. It'll be a bit quieter in the back.
Ahsoka gave up and followed Kaden through the crowd. The girl had broad shoulders and was not afraid to use them to clear a path. When they got through the main crush, Kaden turned left and led Ahsoka to a table that was already occupied.
My sister, Miara,
Kaden said, indicating the dark-skinned girl already seated at the table. Unlike Kaden, whose dark brown hair was still tightly braided, Miara's hair was loose. It was very, very curly and surrounded her head like a cloud. Ahsoka liked it, though she had no idea how Miara kept it out of her way when she was working.
Hi, said Ahsoka. I'm Ashla. She slid into the seat beside Kaden and called Ashla's persona to the front of her mind.
Other introductions were made, and before long Ahsoka had shaken hands with Kaden's entire crew. They were all human but one. Vartan was the oldest, a weathered man in his 40s. At first, Ahsoka thought his baldness was an affectation, like what some of the clones had done to keep their heads cooler in their helmets. But when she looked more closely, she realized that he didn't have any regrowth at all. She didn't really understand how hair worked, not having any herself. But she knew men were often sensitive about that sort of thing. So even though she was curious, she didn't ask. Maylot, a Sullustan woman in her early 30s, had to leave right after introductions were made. Her husband worked a different shift than she did, and she had to go home to feed the children.
She reminded Ahsoka a bit of Master Plo, who had always thought of others, even when he was busy or tired.
The twins, Hoban and Neera, were only a few years older than Ahsoka. They were very white compared with the others, and their matching blue eyes missed very few details. They were also much blunter than Kaden had been when it came to asking Ashla questions about her past. Ahsoka knew that a little information would go a long way, so she offered up what she could. I'm a mechanic, or at least I can fix things, she said.
It's good to meet you then, Hoban said. Especially if you repair our threshers like you did Kaden's.
Did yours break too? Ahsoka asked.
No, said Miara. But they're all old and junky. Kaden's works better now than it ever did, even when she first bought it.
I'm happy to take a look, Ahsoka said.
You can't be worse than my last customer.
They all looked at Kaden in surprise. She grimaced.
Tabola got to her before I did, she said.
Well, at least he didn't scare off completely, Hoban said. And he doesn't drink here very often.
Why not? Ahsoka asked. Kaden said this place is the best. Hoban and Neera exchanged looks, and Neera leaned forward.
Tabola is a mean drunk, she said, and a stupid one. Sober, he can control his tongue, but when he's had a few, he starts to say unpleasant things about people.
Ahsoka digested that. She wasn't used to unbridled emotions. She spent most of her life around people who felt deeply, but who managed, for the most part, to keep those feelings under control. It was one of the reasons that Barriss Offee's betrayal had stung her so deeply. Barriss had been angry with the Jedi Order and had sought to win Ahsoka's sympathies, if not her outright alliance. But she'd done so in the cruelest way imaginable, by tampering with Ahsoka's own choices. To have a person she considered a friend use her to unleash such deep anger and channel it at the Order had changed every part of Ahsoka's outlook. Although it wasn't exactly the same thing, Ahsoka was glad she wouldn't have to deal with the abusive mutterings of the local drunk. Ever since Barriss had poked all those holes in her certainty about the Jedi path, Ahsoka had worked hard to regain the control she'd once possessed. She wasn't in a hurry to give a new bully the opportunity to get under her skin.
We don't like it, Miara said. And neither does Selda, obviously, though he can't always turn away a paying customer.
Ahsoka followed Miara's gesture and saw a tall Togruta male standing behind the bar. His skin was the same color as hers. His left leku was mostly gone, though, cut off at the shoulder, and there was scar tissue where the injury had been sustained. Farming accident, Barton said. A long time ago. They can give you prosthetic hands and feet, but they can't do much about your leku. Selda caught Ahsoka's gaze. She really hoped he didn't think she was staring, and nodded formally. She waved, and he smiled. Then he went back to drying glasses, and she could see his prosthesis as he worked. It went all the way up to his left elbow and made him hold the glasses at a strange angle, but it didn't seem to slow him down.
"Now that he's seen you, I bet we get the best service,"
Hoban said.
"Idiot," said his sister, and cuffed him on the back of the head.
His drink spilled as she jostled him.
"Do you think all Togruta know each other?"
"Of course not,"
Hoban protested. He didn't even try to mop up the mess.
"I just meant he'll be curious because she's new."
"You'll have to forgive my brother," Neera said. "He never thinks before he speaks."
"You're forgiven," said Ahsoka.
"I didn't,"
Hoban started, but then gave up.
"Where's the food? I'm starving."
Every cantina Ahsoka had been in before had been full of transients. Even on Coruscant, the bars were populated by people who were on their way somewhere else, even if it was only to a concert or another party. It was strange to be somewhere where everyone was local. On Raeda, she was the stranger, and she got the distinct impression that if she walked through the doors alone, the music and the talking would have stopped, and she'd have been the center of attention. Even shielded by Kaden and her friends, Ahsoka was the focus of quite a few covert stares as people tried to figure her out.
"They'll get used to you soon enough," said Barton.
He stood up and prepared to push his way back to the bar for refills.
"Do you want to order anything special? Tonight, the drinks are on us."
"He's being ridiculous," Miara said. "Selda only has one kind of alcohol. Just get another round, Barton."
He saluted her, a mocking gesture that Ahsoka found uncomfortably familiar, and went on his way. Miara and Kaden started arguing with the twins about something, and Ahsoka let herself half-listen while she looked around the cantina. It was a habit, assessing her surroundings, but now would be a good time to find out if anyone was too interested in her. She mostly saw tired people who just seemed to want a hot meal at the end of the day. If it weren't for the music, she would have thought this was a commissary or mess hall.
"That's why Selda keeps it so loud," Kaden said when Ahsoka told her what she was thinking. "You eat in a lot of mess halls back wherever you're from?"
"Sometimes," Ahsoka said. "More often, it was eating what we could, where we could."
"You moved around a lot?" Kaden said with some sympathy. "Even when you were little?"
"Not when I was little," Ahsoka said. "But for the last few years, yes."
"My parents settled us here when I was 4, and Miara was 1, Kaden said. "They died in the accident that cut up Selda so bad. But I was 14 by then and just old enough to draw a wage. Barton took me on because of my circumstances, even though everyone else thought I was too young. Then he took Miara on too. Did you travel with your parents?"
The question shouldn't have caught Ahsoka off guard, but it did. She said the first thing that popped into her head. "No, I don't remember my parents very well."
"Who'd you travel with then?"
Kaden asked.
I'm adopted,
Ahsoka stuttered, and hoped the noise of the cantina was enough to cover her hesitation. Sort of. She went through her days trying not to think about her loss, lest her grief incapacitate her. But that just meant that every time it came up, it hurt like new. Whatever question Kaden had next was interrupted by the return of Barton carrying a tray of drinks, Selda trailing behind him with a tray of food. Once everything was passed out, Selda took the seat beside Ahsoka and leaned in so only she would hear him.
"Are you set up okay here?" he asked.
"Yes," she replied, surprised at his kindness.
"There's been a bunch of new people coming out from the core worlds," Selda said. "Non-humans."
Ahsoka had heard the rumors. The Empire was highly selective in who it admitted to positions of power. Palpatine wasn't afraid to step on his old allies, even on his home planet.
"I'm not running from anything that specific," Ahsoka said.
Ashla's lies came easier every time.
"I just wanted to be somewhere quiet."
The cantina band began what must have been a popular song, because most of the people in the room started clapping and singing along with it. Ahsoka winced, and Selda laughed.
"I know what you mean," he shouted over the increased noise. "But if something changes, let me know. Or tell Barton. He's closed-mouthed, but he knows which way is up."
Selda clapped her on the shoulder. The familiarity of the gesture surprised her again, and got up to return to the bar.
Ahsoka watched him walk away. She could see the lines in his tunic and trousers, where his body stopped and his prosthetics began. It must have been a terrible accident.
What did he want?
Kaden asked, as Ahsoka turned to the plate in front of her and began to eat. Just saying hello, Ahsoka said. It's good business for him to know people, isn't it? Kaden nodded and let her eat. The star chart was the only source of light in the room. Outside, the black of space was pricked by distant stars, and inside, all the consoles were dimmed as much as they could be. Jeneth Pilar believed in using only what was necessary and excelled in finding necessary things to use. Before the Empire, he had been a broker, linking goods to buyers, using whatever merchant or smuggler he could find. Now, he found other, more imperial channels for his talents. The Empire had great demand for every variety of commodity, and Jeneth knew the pathways of supply. Before, he had to balance negotiations among multiple parties. Now, he just pointed the might of the Imperial military at a planet, and it took what it wanted. He still got paid, and paid very well. So he didn't mind the destruction, and his hands were clean. So he didn't mind the blood. This new assignment was a challenge, and Jeneth appreciated it. The Empire wanted a planet it could use for food production, preferably one with a small population that no one would miss. It was the second part that had stymied Jeneth at first. But after a few days of careful analysis, he found the solution. All he had to do now was transmit the information to his Imperial contact and wait for the credits to show up in his account. It was, perhaps, all a bit more official than Jeneth might have liked, but working for the Empire had undeniable benefits. His position was a lot more stable than it had been as a freelancer, and as long as he followed the directives he was given, he was mostly left alone. He would have preferred more outright power within the Imperial hierarchy, but it was still early in the business relationship. He could afford patience. Born to be a cog in a machine, Jeneth had found a perfect one. It was straightforward, quiet, brutally efficient, and profitable. The Empire didn't care what happened after it had what it wanted, and Jeneth didn't either. Ra-Ada, he said, before he closed the star chart and sat alone in the dark. It was overly dramatic, but he was fond of the effect. I hope no one is keeping anything important on you. Later that night, alone in her house, Ahsoka couldn't stop thinking about what Zelda had said. In the noise of the cantina, it had been possible to ignore the warning. But in the quiet of her room, it wasn't so easy. The Empire was implacable, she knew, and heartless when it came to death and suffering. But surely the fastest way to incite resistance would be to target particular species. The Senate was still functioning, and someone in it had to have the power to protest. But they wouldn't, Ahsoka realized. They would be too busy protecting their own planets. That was why Kashyyyk was besieged, and why no one had interceded when some of the planet's Wookiees were dispersed to various mines and work camps throughout the galaxy. No one could help them. Most could barely help themselves. That was the Jedi's job. And the Jedi were gone. Gone. The Jedi were gone. Ahsoka thought it mercilessly, over and over again, still too afraid to say the words out loud. Until she could take the final step, the Jedi were dead. All of them. The warriors, the scholars, the diplomats, the generals, the old and the young, the students and the teachers, they were dead, and there was nothing Ahsoka could do. Why had it been her? She had thought 100 times since Order 66. Why had she survived? She wasn't the most powerful. She wasn't even a Jedi Knight, and yet she was still alive when so many others had died. She asked the question so often because she knew the answer. She just hated facing it, as painful as it was. She'd survived because she had left. She had walked away.
She'd walked away from the Jedi, and she'd walked away from Thibeska, and because of that, she was alive, whether she deserved to be or not. She dried her eyes, picked up Tabola's thresher, and went back to work.